the need for speed, for lack of a better term there, did not mean to do that. It does not feel like they're at the top. They feel like a younger brother move is how I put it. Probably making up for some other inadequacy.
You are listening to the Commissioner's Office. Here's your host, the Fantasy Baseball Commissioner himself.
Hello and welcome to episode 20 of the Commissioner's Office. I am your host and the Fantasy Baseball Commish, Nathan. You can follow me at Dynasty One Stop and find info on my commissioning service at my website, linked on my Twitter account. We'll be back after a quick break to talk to Nick Savali about how he got into fantasy baseball, being the brother of a major leaguer, 30 Rock, and some injury rundowns that you won't want to miss. We'll jump into that great conversation after this quick break. Now stepping into the commissioner's office, it's Doctor of Physical Therapy, Quinnipiac University baseball player, a writer at Fantrax and the Injury Report author, the newest manager of 30 Rock, and a much better known person than his brother, who seems only to get on podcasts to talk about sad news of people getting injured, so we'll try to flip that up a little tonight. It's Nick Savali. Nick, thanks for joining me.
Yeah, thanks for having me in. It's definitely the time of year where I just go around giving everyone bad news about injuries, but they're keeping me busy early in the season.
Yeah, and there seems to have been a rash of them. I don't know if that's just every year and I feel like it's new every year, or if it's actually been more. But so it's great to have you on. We'll get into some injuries and real people baseball. But for now, let's stay in the fantasy world. How did you get into fantasy? Obviously, you played baseball. Obviously, you have a brother who's a major league pitcher. But was baseball always a part of your guys' life growing up? And then now it's fantasy, or how did that journey happen?
Yeah, it was always a part of our lives growing up, kind of like a lot of kids growing up playing Little League since they were 4 years old or whatever it is. As far as fantasy baseball goes, just a couple friends and I just started playing in high school and not really knowing what we're doing. I remember the first year, nobody wanted Mike Trout because he stunk the first month he played. And I think that was my first year playing.
Okay.
So yeah. Maybe it was a few years after high school, but it was pretty casual. And then the last few years is when I really got into it. I just happened to have a friend who had a spot in the league and I joined up, started listening to some podcasts to get a little bit more knowledge and just hear people talk about the game itself. Cause a lot of fantasy baseball writers and podcasters have great insight on the game. Mm-hmm. And it kind of just evolved to joining more and more leagues. And now another one this past week.
Right. Yeah. So were you a pitcher too, when you played at Quinnipiac, in terms of a real baseball journey?
I was mostly middle infield, and okay. It kind of evolved to utility guy into my senior year. And after 4 years of kind of wearing my coaches down, they finally let me pitch a couple innings at the end of my senior year. So the answer is yes, I did pitch, but it was not my primary position there.
Gotcha. Yeah. What was it like growing up? Did you guys know early on that Aaron might go pro, or was that just kind of as things developed, it ended up happening?
I think the only one who knew that he was going pro was himself. And yeah, he's had this crazy confidence since he was young. And quite honestly, it was just the two of us. We spent all our time together, all our time playing sports and competing and everything. And I didn't know until recently that he was really confident that he was going to make it. I mean, he was a kid going into high school who was still kind of like growing into his body. And I was away at college by the time he was a sophomore. And every year I came back and watched a couple of his high school games, I was like, who is this kid? Like, he's head and shoulders better than he was before. And I remember the first moment I thought there would be something real there was, I think, his senior year. Maybe junior year, and he threw a curveball to a kid And I saw it go from the kid's helmet down to his ankles. And I was like, oh, okay, there's something here. And he just had such consistent growth every year, and he's still doing that now. And it's really cool. He's got determination more than anyone I know. So it works out.
Yeah, certainly. It's sure a different thing when you're brothers in the bigs, but yeah. Very cool. We'll get to some injuries in a bit. We'll get to all of that. But you said you started playing fantasy recently, mostly dynasties, some redraft mix. Do you have a preference there?
I definitely prefer the dynasty leagues. I split one with my cousin, and then I'm in four of my own this year, and they're all dynasty leagues. And I don't mind the roto. I think the biggest reason I don't play it as much anymore is just the leagues I was in kind of fell apart. Mm-hmm. And dynasty, it just seems like people are more invested, and you know, it's a different level of investment, and it seems that people are a lot more interested in it throughout the year. So that's what I've stuck with.
Yeah. And you just joined one that I think has the most interest of any league I have run or seen. Nick recently joined 30 Rock. You've already ripped off 5 trades, I think.
Something like
in
that.
In the 4 days you've been in the league, which
trading,
is fair.
So,
yeah. Well, you're in a great league for that. It's very active. Mm-hmm. Even with 30 managers, it's a lot, but keeps moving. So your team's in third place. You've made some trades, and we'll talk about those in a second. But how did you feel jumping in? Have you taken over a team before, or have you only really run ones you've drafted from the beginning?
I've actually only exclusively taken over teams, which isn't ideal. I've never done my own dynasty startup, which is something hopefully I'll do next year.
Yeah.
But I've only taken over teams, and this one, I heard from you and Chris, and initially I was thinking that's a pretty good team. And the most intriguing part was just that the league was full of so many people who knew what they were talking about. And I said, it sounds great to me. I want to be a part of that. And the good team was an added bonus.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you've done some moves to continue to try to improve that. We certainly don't need to go into all of them. Some of them a little more minute than others in terms of pieces around the edges. But two, I do want to kind of get into. You made a trade with another Nick in the league, mm-hmm. and you sent him Framil Reyes, next year's third round draft pick, Freddie Valdez, Sam Clay, and Caleb Barger, for Hader, Jeremiah Jackson, and a fifth round pick next year. Just shoring up the relief staff there. Other considerations in that trade?
Yeah, a little bit. I had Franmil, and I have Otani, both with the UT eligibility. And my thought was to hold on to them a little bit and see who's going to emerge with more promise, but I had some pretty quick interest in Reyes. And what I also noticed were there was a lot of people looking at relief pitchers, because the team I inherited had not necessarily high end depth, but there was depth. Mm-hmm. And I figured if I don't mind trading them away, and if I can get Josh Hader, then I can really take advantage of the interest in the other relief pitchers, start getting some smaller pieces that I usually target in all my leagues. I also a big fan of Jeremiah Jackson. He's the minor leaguer I got in that deal, shortstop for the Angels, and he's got some pretty good pop for middle infielder, and he's just a good guy to take a chance on who can really turn into some exciting prospect that maybe a flip later or just ride the wave.
Yeah, certainly. I've been a Jackson, I don't know if I want to say believer, but I've liked him for a little while, so yeah. I liked that pickup for you. And then just today, you made a deal with Eric Cross, got Gene Segura, Cody Clemens for Jose de la Cruz and Michael Pineda. I'll just let you take the floor and say whatever you want to say on that one.
Yeah, he made it known that he was looking to shake things up a little bit, and I wanted a little bit more depth in my lineup. The previous manager had more depth on the pitching side, and I wanted to run out there with another guy who has eligibility at three infield positions, which just I could move McNeil around and some other guys who have multi-position eligibility, and I just really like rostering those guys. Pineda, I just moved because I think he's performing well and probably better than he's going to end up performing, and it's a little bit of a sell high. I still like him. I wasn't looking to give him up, and I'm always a little concerned when Eric requests a certain prospect and I say, well, this guy's probably going to be good, but you know, I'll just run with it, and I'm going to go with my gut with the multi-positional guy. So he got De La Cruz on Detroit's minor league, and I'll be looking out for him because usually he knows what he's talking about with the prospects.
Yeah, sometimes I just go and check his team in this league to see if there are guys I should look into.
It's a great resource, I guess, huh?
It is. And yeah, the multi-positional thing, especially with how deep this league is, with needing to keep active rosters, but as a contending team wanting that anyways, it's really helpful because, I mean, you've got Muncy, who's got three positional eligibility, Segura has three, McNeil has three, just really helps keeping good people in your lineup when the waiver wire is literally bare of anyone who can play in the majors. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, thought those were some really good pickups. Heading into the rest of this year, then, you're had a good start as a team. You're waiting on some guys to come back from injury with Springer and Yelich, who we will talk about in a bit. But how do you feel going forward? You think you can continue to stay at the top here?
I think so. I think I'll be looking to make a few more moves to try to solidify that. And still, you know, with the 30 teams, I still haven't looked into everyone's roster that much. Still working on that. But yeah, I think after the few teams I've seen, I'm kind of gauged them, be like, all right, well, my guys kind of stack up. I don't necessarily have that stud with, you know, with Yelich and Springer on the bench, but they are primed to come back fairly soon. So yeah, I could definitely see me staying in the top 10 and always making a push at the top five at least.
Right. Yeah. And you've had some help from Yelich this year before you took it over, but Springer's given you nothing this far. So to be up here without him producing at all is certainly better than not. Okay. Let's pivot then and talk a little bit about one player in particular, and sort of broadly, you've got Severino on your team. He's obviously coming back from TJ. We had mentioned in the group chat when you took over the team, the previous owner was pretty actively trying to move Severino, and you made a comment about really never selling TJ guys. So what's your general approach to people coming back to Tommy John? How do you feel about the surgery, success rates, all of those sorts of things as you look at those players on your roster or potentially acquiring them?
Yeah, I generally speaking, I'm always trusting a guy to get back to 95 or 100% of what they were before surgery. And the reason for that is just with all the advancements in surgical procedures and rehab and the technology that athletes have now to really just maximize their return and recovery. We're seeing Carlos Rodon come back a couple years of being on the sidelines and rehabbing, and you know, he's added 3 or 4 miles an hour to what he used to throw. And some guys come back even stronger. And really, I know it's a bit of a mystery to people what the Tommy John surgery is, but essentially they're just repairing one ligament in your elbow. And it does take a toll on everything, and it's a long recovery. But if you're a pitcher who has one issue and it's a ligament that's injured, and then they go and fix it, if everything's going right and we're not getting reports of people having setbacks in rehab or having additional shoulder injuries or anything like that, my assumption is they're going to come back as strong as ever. and more of a just kind of psychological approach is as far as buying and selling, I'll usually try to trade for a Tommy John guy when they're like 9 months into rehab and the other manager's just sick of looking at them on their IL and they're thinking, is this really? And that's just more of a try to get into the psyche of people. But yeah, and I've got a few guys in other leagues who are in that range now, the Sales, the Severinos. And if you can just be patient with them and you have the IL flexibility, the way things are going nowadays, people are coming back looking really good. So I generally just try to be patient with them.
Yeah. So when that injury happens, or injuries, I guess, that can lead to Tommy John, is that usually a tear, a partial tear? And then, like, what does that look like? To, 'cause, I mean, you're obviously the physical therapist. I have different degrees. But when they're repairing that, what kind of process is that? How complicated is it? I mean, obviously the process has developed a lot since Tommy John had it, but what does that look like? And are there multiple injuries that lead to needing that? And is it a pretty straightforward process at this point?
Well, the recovery and the surgery is fairly standardized and straightforward. You see the scars on people's arms. They're 4 to 6 inches long sometimes. So it is very intricate surgery. They got to get in there, get around a lot of structures, and usually repair that, like you said, partial tear or complete tear of the ligament. The UCL, the ulnar collateral ligament, is what they're referring to. As far as how people get that injury, that can be a number of different things, because usually what happens is you're compensating for a lack of strength or a lack of stability, and the ligament in your elbow takes on additional stress. So it could be somebody who does not have enough forearm strength or flexibility. It could be somebody who has poor shoulder mobility and they're trying to make up for it by getting more rotation in their elbow. And that the list goes on. So a big part of this recovery is not only fixing it, but for the physical therapist to say, well, we got to figure out why this happened in the first place. And that's something with video technology and monitoring that has improved drastically. And that's why I'm more confident in these guys coming back, because they can go back and look at their hours and hours of film and say, oh, now I see it. At this, you know, frame 54, you're doing this with your shoulder. And so, yeah, it's a complicated thing to diagnose why it happened, but it's an easy thing to rehab because it's very standardized.
Okay. Are you optimistic that as things like Grapsodo and all the things where you can pretty much see inside and the frame by frame, that trainers and everyone might be able to see what's happening before the injury happens and help adjust, strengthen those things, so there's fewer of these, since there's been such a rise lately?
Yeah, I think that's going to be an interesting trend to look at, because at the same time where we can notice all these imperfections, I guess you could say, there's also people trying to maximize their effort and throw every decimal of a mile an hour faster in every single pitch. Right. So it's kind of this, I wonder if we'll even just see like the same amount of surgeries going forward, because the need for speed, for lack of a better term there, did not mean to do that. Need for speed is going to be matched by this new ability to view what this person's doing and their body mechanics. And they might just balance each other out, and, or people might get smart and start saying, these are our, you know, sometimes $1 million draft vest investments. We have to protect them before they get hurt. And if they're smart about it, yeah, what you said should happen, that they see these injuries prophylactically before they start to feel the pain and have to get surgery.
Right. Because I mean, your body can only throw so hard before your ligament's going to start compensating. But
And yeah, there's few guys that have the perfect mechanics like Pedro did, where he's 5'9" and can get to almost 100. When people are beefed up like Lorenzen, you know, and you see him looking like a bodybuilder, you're thinking there something's got to be compensating in this body for that speed to be coming out of it. You know, something's got to be getting stretched more than it should. And I don't know, maybe he's got perfect mechanics, but that's the first guy who comes to mind when I think of, like, he does not look like a pitcher.
Yeah, that's fair. It is interesting too, since there's so many different mechanics, and I know all the, you know, the driveline stuff and all of that has created conversations with us too, but it will be interesting to see if that actually can help prevent injuries, not just recover well from them. So certainly. The other sort of big picture injury thing is you hear a term thrown around sometimes that this guy's injury prone. And sometimes it feels like it's applied fairly if someone keeps having the same injury. And sometimes I've heard it applied to someone like Chris Bryant, who's had a number of varying small injuries. So do you think that injury proneness is a thing, especially outside of, like, well, you've hurt this before, so the risk of you re-injuring it is higher. What do you kind of think about that?
I think it has a lot to do with the type of injury people are sustaining. Okay. So the two people that come to mind first when this discussion comes up is Josh Donaldson is one of them, who has pulled or torn different soft tissue body parts, you know, each of three of the last 4 years or something like that. And I think it's, I do think it's a fairly accurate description to say he's someone who's injury prone. He's, for whatever reason, he consistently strains his muscles, and it doesn't have to be the same muscle. It's all the way up and down the leg, versus somebody say like, Corey Kluber, who for his first injury in 2019, I believe, he got hit with a comebacker and broke his forearm. Well, that's that's not anyone's fault. And the next year he had one soft tissue injury, yes, but then coming into this season, everyone's saying, oh, he's injury prone. He's missed 2 years in a row. And it's like, well, that's true, but it doesn't kind of justify what you're saying, because one of them was a total freak accident. If you're talking about somebody who just has a random neck strain, and then they have a irritated meniscus, and then they have like Achilles tendonitis, I don't know if you can really say that they're naturally injury prone. Maybe you say that they're somebody who plays at a very high level of intensity. And that's kind of that border that Tatis walks, that line that he walks, is he plays extremely hard and he does get injured fairly frequently. But I think if anyone played that hard, they probably would. So, maybe the term should be somewhat related to the intensity that they play. But yeah, there are some cases like Donaldson's just had the same or similar injury up and down his legs with different muscles for years now. And I don't think it's wrong to call him injury prone or someone in a similar situation. Like Troy Tulowitzki was very similar to that.
Right. Yeah, that makes sense. Do you think, I remember when Arrieta came over to the Cubs and he started doing all the Pilates, everyone was like, oh, is this going to protect him from getting injured? Which he didn't get injured. But do you think there's something with maybe some newer forms or different modified approaches to working out that can kind of help with those sorts of things? Or are things like soft tissue injuries just, they happen and then it's hard to heal from them all the way sometimes?
No, there are absolutely exercise methods and preventative physical therapy methods that are helping with this type of thing and will help in the future. That Pilates and yoga and all the things he was doing was pretty interesting, because whether it was him getting 2 good years, 3 good years in a row and the rest of the league kind of waking up to it, or if it was just maybe a coincidence, that time about 5-6 years ago is when teams really started embracing this yoga, Pilates, mobility, flexibility.
Yep.
And you know, even just looking at the pitchers around the league, they used to all look like Lance Lynn, you know, big chunky guys who could get their velo gut behind them. That's what we used to call it in college when the pitchers would get their beer bellies. They call it a velo gut. But now you see guys who are all looking tall, lanky, you know, just think Shane Bieber. Mm-hmm. And if you freeze frame them when they're throwing, they look like they're nearly able to do a split. You know, their hip mobility is absolutely crazy right now. Mm-hmm. And that's something that's being taught to high schoolers and probably even younger at this point. So when your joint mobility gets that good, your muscles really don't have to strain so hard to get the motions you're trying to make. So to go back to your question, yeah, every single type of possible exercise that will improve mobility and improve strength at different body positions and different angles is definitely being applied. I mean, even talking to my brother after he pitches or before he pitches, he's like, oh, I went to this trainer to do this. And I went over here and I got some massage and I went there and I did cupping. And it's like an 8-hour day, even when they're 3 days out from their start, you know, just mm-hmm. going around and getting rehab. So yeah, it's definitely being taken advantage of, which is great to see.
Yeah, for sure. I think felt like there was a little bit of resistance to that at some points in the thing.
Oh yeah, definitely.
I think the game is realizing the value of it. So it's mm-hmm. good to see that. So let's do a little bit of the, hopefully not too depressing, we can say some people are healthy, injury quick hits. So you've said you're concerned about Tatis coming back. He had the shoulder subluxation and he's already playing again. So I guess explain what that is. And do you think he should be on the field already?
Yeah. So a subluxation is basically a really quick dislocation where the joint is no longer where it should be, but it doesn't stay dislocated. It pops right back into place. Whether mm-hmm. that's just the momentum of how you're moving or if your muscles and tendons kind of helped guide the shoulder back into place. And a lot of times the easiest thing to imagine is a lot of people have seen or experienced a kneecap dislocation. So sometimes mm-hmm. it'll go out to the side and pop back in. And it's very easy to see that because it's a very superficial joint. And other times it'll get dislocated and stay out there. And then that's a true dislocation and you got to go get it set. But anyway, he got the subluxation. So it went back into place. But the effects of that is that every bit of surrounding tissue has the possibility for tear or just extreme stretching. So there's a ton of muscles and tendons that surround the shoulder joint. And without them, the joint is very unstable. So you have to imagine at least one, probably multiple of these tendons and muscles and ligaments had some extreme form of getting stretched out in a really mm-hmm. short period of time. And what made me nervous about this initially was there was a play in spring training where he felt shoulder discomfort and it wasn't even a diving play. It was just him ranging to his right, pulling his arm forward to do a backhand play with that left arm. And it looked like nothing. And he just came out of it walking off the field. And it's like, this guy's shoulder is already really unstable. Mm-hmm. And then he goes and swings and collapses to the ground a few weeks later, as we all saw. I just don't understand why they wanted to get him out so quickly. You know, it's mm-hmm. they've got 14 years with him. They paid him $340 million. And I wonder, was it just so he could be out for the Dodger series? Or I can't even imagine his swelling is down in the shoulder completely. So, no, I don't think, even if it's best case scenario and there's not much stretching going on in that shoulder, I just don't understand the risk to send him out this early.
Especially with the depth they have. Like,
oh, yeah.
They had Kim who could slide right in. And, he hasn't exactly blown anyone away yet. But, yes, it does. Does seem a little concerning, especially when you've already invested in the guy.
Yeah, and it's just exactly what that was the next point I was going to make. They have all this depth and so many people they could plug in there, and it just seems like a move by a team who does not feel like they're at the top. They feel like a younger brother move is how I put it. Like they're living up to the Dodgers. They're trying to keep up with them. And they're just like, let's just throw them out there. We can keep up with them. When the smart move, I think, would have been to just say, you know, we got this. He's going to get back. We got to get him back to full health before we get there. And I don't know. I could be wrong, and he could be healthy the rest of the year, but I think it's a very high risk, moderate reward to bring him back this soon.
Yeah. Well, let's hope he stays healthy and doesn't, but yeah
I hope
it doesn't seem like the smart move.
Yeah.
So someone who is playing, and you were on the 5-tool pod in the off season and talked about this and was something that made me buy back in on him, but Yordan Alvarez is out there. He's playing. You seemed confident he could return to, he was never a great defender, so it's not like playing the field was a big concern to start with, but everything you've seen still make you think, yeah, I'm not worried about this injury going forward.
Oh yeah. No, he's looked really good. No concerns about anything so far. The biggest thing that it comes down to, cause I could talk about him for hours, but what it comes down to is he had an issue with his knees and he was still one of the most elite hitters in baseball history for one season. Mm-hmm. Right. And now he's coming back and he fixed that problem. So what's his ceiling now? Like, I know a lot of people like to think, well, maybe in 7 or 8 years, he might see another problem down the road. And maybe he does. I don't think he does. But even if that's the case, do you not want to buy into maybe the best hitter in baseball for 7 years? Like, that was another thing where I was like, hey, he's going 80th overall in drafts. Did people forget about 2019 already? And everything he's done this season has looked like he's healthy. So I'm all in on him.
Well, Jordan Rosenblum will be happy to hear that, because as our listeners know, he traded Trout to get him in 30 Rock. So
yeah, right?
Yeah. Good luck tying him away.
Yeah. I mean, Trout's a tough, that is a tough one, but he is younger, so he might get a lot more years of production.
That was, part of Jordan's argument. Shelley and Jake Devereaux weren't huge fans of the trade, and Jordan had a whole episode of his rebuttal. So the listeners certainly know his take on it. So moving down the line, Bellinger is out with a hairline fracture. What should we be looking for there? Obviously, bone and tissue injuries get a little different, but what does that look like?
Yeah, this one's going to be pretty straightforward. They're going to keep x-raying that leg every week or so, and they're going to say, okay, now it's 80% healed, now it's 90% healed. What you're going to want to do if you're rostering him is, obviously, you can't drop him. I wouldn't be trying to trade him, because I think he's going to come back as 100% as you can from any injury. There's no long-term implications from it. But what you want to look for is when he starts taking at-bats off of live pitching, because it's very easy to take to do T-work and be in control and still land your foot softly. What I'm going to be looking for is, when does he start hit off live pitching? When is he going to be able to make that drive forward with his body, with both legs, and handle changes in his swing path if he's trying to adjust for a breaking ball? Things like that. And of course, it's the Dodgers, so even if they say he's coming back in a few days, they could hold him out another week just with all the games they play. But that's what you sign up for when you draft a Dodgers player anyway.
Yes, certainly always a playing time question there. So with those sorts of injuries, does the body just naturally heal? Like, you don't set that, you don't do anything, you just needs time?
Yep. That's basically it. So there's a fracture, but it's not enough that anything has shifted or adjusted, or it's, I guess, kind of like a little crack, you could imagine, and it's going to heal up and all the bone cells are going to realign. And a lot of times it even comes back and grows stronger than it was before, but really there shouldn't be any long-term implications. It's just, he's going to miss whatever they projected him 5 to 6 weeks, and he should be back in 100%.
Okay. So next let's talk about a couple hamstring injuries. You had Inciarte and Cattell with hamstring strains, and then you had Carrasco with a hamstring tear. What do those look like? Are those injuries that you really have to worry about getting re-aggravated or occurring again? What does that look like?
Yeah, hamstring strains and tears are one of the injuries that there's clear data showing that a previous injury of the same type can lead to a higher risk of that same injury in the future. But there are also plenty of players who've had it once and never had an issue with it again. Carrasco seems to be ahead of schedule. He threw a 4-inning game, I believe, today or yesterday, and he might make it back in a couple weeks. And then you got the other guys, Marte and Ciarte, making it a lot harder to predict because they're fielders who rely on their speed a little bit. Mm-hmm. The difference between a strain and a tear is not that significant. It's kind of just the way that the teams want to word it, because a strain technically is a small tear of the muscle anyway. Okay. So it just goes off of the grade 1, 2, 3, and the higher the number, the higher the severity. But you know, that's another one where you want to see when they start returning to dynamic drills, where they're changing direction and changing speed of what they're doing. Cause that was an injury I had throughout my entire college career. I had about 3, maybe 4 strains/tears of my hamstrings, couple on each leg. Okay. And you could tear your hamstring partially and then 2 days later be hitting off a tee. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't mean you're within even a couple of weeks of coming back. It's really when you start doing that speeding up, slowing down, changing directions and hitting live pitching and saying there's a fastball. Oh, I got to adjust. It's a off-speed pitch. And then your body's moving in all different ways you can't control. And that's when you know if you're ready to come back. So I'm usually more confident in pitchers coming back from it, because Carrasco injured his doing some running drills. And if he's just taking it easy on the base paths, that shouldn't be an issue. But the other guys, I'm usually a little bit more weary of them coming back, just because I've gone through it and know that that is pretty debilitating when you have to ramp up so slowly.
Right. And both of those guys, speed is a central asset of their game. Definitely. So, right. It's Carrasco can just walk to first anytime he wants.
Yeah.
And bring back the DH. But that's a different conversation. So we can make Doug Ishikawa either very happy or sad here. Nelson Lamet and his elbow. It sounds like he's coming back. This just keeps flaring up. It seems like there's inevitably going to be something, but from what we do know, which doesn't seem to be a whole lot, what are you seeing with Lamet?
Yeah, he's one of the harder ones to kind of pick up on what exactly is going on. In most of the descriptions I've seen with him, it's been extremely vague. Elbow discomfort, elbow inflammation. And it's kind of hard writing the articles and going into this stuff sometime, because so many times the articles or beat writers will just say he's dealing with the right elbow injury. Like, I have no idea how to give any professional opinion on this other than what you would already know.
Plenty of things you can mess up in an elbow. Yeah.
And so I tried to kind of like mine the news for quotes from him or from trainers, and there's not all that much. And it's kind of seems like the opposite of what they've done with Tatis, where they threw him back out there. And then on the other side with Lamet, they're being ultra conservative. So I'm not really sure what to make of that. But it seems like he is throwing simulated games and he's hitting his velocities that he used to hit. I think he's been in the upper 90s. So I really like his stuff, and I like the possibility of him coming back soon. I don't necessarily like the idea that, or the assumption that he's going to throw more than 100 innings, because I have to think they're going to try to rest him more periodically than others. And I kind of almost treat him like a Josh Hader type, where he'll give you maybe 80 awesome innings. And maybe they do throw in the bullpen. I don't know, but I can't based on all the different variations of this hurts, now this hurts, and it's kind of soreness, but it's inflammation. that just makes me think there's a lot of things going on, and I can't trust him to be like a stalwart in your rotation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and even with Clevinger out, you could wonder, do they do something with him and Gore? Do they do something with, I mean, Morihone's injured right now too with a strained forearm, but
yeah,
you know, what if he comes back, when he comes back, what does that look like?
Right.
Because they certainly have plenty of talented arms. It's just how they want to deploy them. So
yeah, they have a lot of options, that's for sure.
Yeah. Acquiring pitchers and gave up nothing. One other pitcher, Zach Britton, and maybe more broadly, this is a conversation about bone chips. Because you hear every once in a while, this player had some removed. What does that look like? What are they? How do they happen? What's the story with those sorts of injuries?
Yeah, well, it is what it sounds like. They're small bits of bone that kind of end up. Sometimes it can be cartilage too. They kind of just globalize them and call it bone chips. But basically, it's just what it sounds like. It's in a spot where there's repetitive strain and stress. The tendons are pulling on your bones constantly to make the muscles work and give them leverage. And sometimes there are tiny, tiny little bits that kind of get pulled right off the bone. Sometimes it can happen from impact injury. Other times it can happen, not most likely with athletes, but with a bone disease where people have softer bones than others. Mm-hmm. But yeah, like I said, it could be bone or cartilage. And basically what happens is there's a space in your arm dedicated for the joint, and there's a capsule around it, and it kind of keeps everything in place. It keeps all of the fluid that's meant to lubricate your joint and keep it fluid and moving. And if there's a little piece of bone that gets stuck floating around in there, you start to feel it, and mm-hmm. it could only be in certain positions or making certain motions. But the good part about that injury is once you get them out of there, there's really minimal recovery time or minimal side effects. It's just okay. The amount of time it takes for you to get deal with the swelling from the surgery. It happens often in the elbow, and we see people get surgery and sometimes they're back in a few weeks. And we've also seen it where people come back and they start noticing these other issues of forearm tenderness or inflammation in the area. And then you think, okay, so this was caused by an underlying thing before. It wasn't just the bone chips. Something was causing the bone chips. So hopefully with Britton and with a lot of other guys who end up with it, it's just you go in, you get out the little chips of bone that are floating around, and a couple days of rest, and then you start to build up again, and hopefully no setbacks.
Perfect. What we like to hear. Well, unless you're a Red Sox fan, then maybe not with Britton. But right. So a number of athletes, one of whom is on your 30 Rock team, are out with oblique injuries right now. You got Mondesi, Springer, Merriweather. Like other tissue injuries, it takes time to heal depending on the grade.
Yeah, it's similar in that way. One thing that's interesting about when they classify oblique injuries is that there is an internal oblique muscle and an external oblique muscle. So one, and there's two on either side of your body. So the left has an inner and outer, internal and external, and the right has an internal and external, and they're each responsible for twisting your body in separate directions. So if you were to put your hands down on either side of your stomach, and you can imagine an X in either position. So there's two X's on the lower part of your stomach, and that's kind of the direction the muscles go in. So one's responsible for twisting to the left, one's to the right. And if you kind of imagine that, and you can see how they would line up. Mm-hmm. But so it's very tricky when I'm trying to classify people's timetables, because they almost never specify, is it the internal or the external oblique? Yeah. But what it is it's basically the most powerful twisting muscle of your upper body. And you can imagine how that comes into play in baseball.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yes. I did not realize that there was that much involved with the oblique. So that's interesting. And now how to trust timetables is even more interesting.
And it's kind of like if you imagine, you know, how people when they're working out, they want to get that V in their lower abdominals. That's one of the obliques there. It kind of goes in that diagonal pattern.
Okay.
So just for more visualization.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that's helpful. So moving on to another injured outfielder for you. Yelich is out with the low back injury. This is not the first time he's had some problems here. We don't have a ton of information unless you've seen more than I found. What are you looking at here? Do you think this is fatigue? Is it overcompensating? Is it something we just don't know about?
Like you said, it's kind of hard to speculate on this one because they just keep using the word soreness or stiffness.
Mm-hmm.
And in that case, it literally could be something like he slept on it wrong for a night and it's been bothering him. But he's had these injuries in the past, so we probably assume it's something that's fairly recurring. Mm-hmm. Overall, I'm not all that concerned about it because having played, even though it's not a 162 game season, you pretty much have back stiffness and soreness playing baseball from like game number 5 on, unless you're a little bit lucky. And maybe I'm wondering if in the past few years, how he's made a bit of a change to his swing path, getting the bat up a little bit more, that could affect it. Because if you don't equally work on your hip mobility and your spine mobility, then we go back to that, you know, he's compensating somewhere. And if you're going to swing up and you're going to bend your back, let's see, he's lefty. So if you're going to bend to your left side to try to angle your body to swing up, you better have good hip mobility or really good spinal and pelvic mobility. And I have a feeling that he changed his bat path and maybe his body hasn't caught up to it yet. Which it's been a couple of years, but it does take a long time for the body to change and make that kind of adjustment. So it could be something where he comes out of it and he's just healthy the rest of the year. And it was just his body readjusting again, because it's April and it's cold. That's kind of my thought. And they're just thinking, why would we throw him out there if he's still sore?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That makes sense. Though they do not have the backup the Padres have.
No, that's
protecting, not rushing stars. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. That's certainly interesting with his injury. A few more. Acuna, mild abdominal strain, seemingly should be fine.
Seems okay. He's probably going to want to avoid headfirst slides and too many diving plays in the outfield, but if he can temper his intensity a little bit and just be a little mindful, it doesn't sound like it's anything to worry about. Maybe a couple more days.
Okay. Good.
That's great news.
Staying in Atlanta, Ozzy Albies, he's got the calf thing. He hit himself with a fouled off pitch. He got hit by a pitch. We don't really know a whole lot. He hasn't been put on the IL, which is, I guess, encouraging. But any thoughts on that? Though I'm guessing you're mainly just would have to go off the plays themselves since we haven't seen much reporting.
Yeah, well, my first thought is it's probably not a fracture, because surely they'd take an x-ray and throw him on the IL if it was. But then you see the Dodgers not announce that Bellinger had a fracture for what, like 5 days? So I don't know. That's still frustrating. I don't know how they didn't know that right away. Or maybe they did and they're just playing their Dodger games. But I'm assuming it's not a fracture because they haven't thrown him on the IL yet. So it's probably short term.
Yeah. That's good. He's my main second baseman in a league. Finally, we've got two pitchers. Strasburg's got the shoulder inflammation, and Lance Lynn has the right trap. Obviously, different injuries, but what are you thinking with those two?
So for Strasburg, I was very, very cautious of him going into the year anyway, because with the carpal tunnel surgery, it's a pretty delicate recovery. It's not necessarily one that's standardized as well as a Tommy John, where you're hitting certain marks by certain months because it's not usually an athlete injury. It's usually someone who can take their time and they're not being rushed back to pitch for millions of dollars. Right. So I was very uneasy about him coming back and even beginning the year on the roster. And now he's got shoulder problems and it's the same theme. I'm thinking, is he compensating? Is he doing something with his shoulder to try to limit how much he's using his forearm flexors? I would be shocked if his forearm flexors in his right arm were as strong as they were before his injury. Mm-hmm. After that little time and having to spend 4 to 6 weeks not basically moving his arm at all. And when you have decreased strength lower down that chain in your arm, you're going to have to make up for it somewhere else.
Right.
So I could totally see this season just being a series of injuries for him and coming back, but then dealing with something else. I think if you're rostering him, you hope that he stays on the IL a little bit longer now just to get it right and take the time he needs. And then hopefully he can stick with you the rest of the year. But I don't roster him anywhere. I was pretty worried about him this year.
Yeah. I think I may have one share from a dynasty, but certainly no redrafts. And yeah, it's kind of been I'm not going to trade him when he's injured, but he hasn't gotten healthy. So
yeah, well, he is a great person to buy back on next year if he has a rough year, because at that point he'll have an entire offseason to recalibrate things and could be a great option then. Yeah. But then to go into Lance Lynn, he has that upper trap strain, which is a very, very strange injury for a pitcher. Again, he's probably, if you're having a strain in a muscle that's not a big mover with the throwing motion, you're probably making up for some other inadequacy. The weird thing about that game was he was on almost exclusively fastballs for two-seam cutters through the fifth inning. And the announcers, they just kept saying, he's just throwing all fastballs. It's just crazy. And he's having success with it. Then his velo started coming down. He starts throwing a lot of sliders and other off-speed stuff. And so I'm wondering, I want to look back and see, is there any pitch in that fourth or fifth inning where something looks different? But at the same time, it's not a huge muscle as far as propelling the ball forward. So he could maybe just miss one start, a total of 10 days or so. I don't think he'll be out that long.
Okay. Yeah. Good to hear. And then the one that just came out today, Starling Marte had a non-displaced fracture in his 12th rib on his left side. Report is he's just going to not do anything for a bit. Do those just have to sit and heal?
Basically, I mean, you can't cast the ribs.
Right.
There's nothing to do there. It's better that it's his 12th rib, and the reason for that is the 12th rib is all the way at the bottom. They also refer to them as the floating ribs because the more medial part of the rib, or the one that's closer to the middle of your body, does not attach to your sternum. It's not attached to any cartilage that will join up at your sternum. So it's just floating there. So it starts at your spine, and on either side, it kind of wraps around the edge of your body. And it just stops in the middle of your thorax there. And it's kind of where they tell boxers to aim because it's really painful if you get hit there. And they call aim for the floating ribs. But people have that rib removed. They have it fractured and they keep playing. And if it's a non-displaced fracture, it means nothing's out of place. It's probably a smaller fracture that will heal on its own. I'm curious to see if they're going to get some kind of like basketball style undershirt where there's padding there. I would hope they would have something like that. But it'll be entirely based on his pain levels, because you could have that injury and it could be pretty pain-free and you can do what you need to do. So it really depends. If he comes back and he's just like, this is killing me, then it could be, you know, it could be a few weeks on the IL, or he could come back swinging and just say, nah, it's fine, I'll just try not to get hit there again. It really depends on just what he's feeling, because it could vary a lot.
Is that the sort of injury that if he comes back and pain's okay, he could seriously aggravate or injure with, you know, a diving catch or a head first slide, since he's an outfielder and a speedster?
Yeah, definitely could. And I wonder if that's going to affect his stealing. Most guys who are stealing second base, at least, are sliding head first, mm-hmm. and they're leaning to the right slightly because they're trying to get that left arm over to grab the outside of the bag. So mm-hmm. I could see a situation where he could slide and lean right and kind of take the pressure off it and be okay.
Okay.
Sliding feet first, he should be fine too if he's going on down on that right leg.
Right.
Unless, of course, the ball catches him right there. That would be terrible. Right. Yeah, but it's very possible he's in a place where if he even breathes heavy, it's killing him. Like, it's the range mm-hmm. of what he's feeling is very wide. So that's one where I'd be looking to see if there's a quote from him that pops up in any article.
Okay. Like, yeah.
I'd go off of that more than any kind of medical protocol.
Right. Yeah. Ribs injuries can hurt even if it's not fractured. So,
oh, yeah.
That's, yeah. I speak from experience on that one. Yeah. So, kind of broadly, with all of this, are there things that, for those of us who aren't medical professionals and haven't spent years of our lives studying the body, are there like terms we should kind of maybe rethink when we hear it's this injury or refamiliarize ourselves? Like, you talked about how with the oblique, it's a lot more complicated than just an oblique strain because we don't know what is actually strained. Are there other things like that you think as baseball fans, as fantasy players, we need to just have a basic knowledge of anatomy, understanding of these injuries so that we can intelligently do this? Obviously, we have your handy injury reports to help. But outside of that, when we just see a report so that we can not over or underreact, are there certain terms that would be good for us to just think about?
Yeah, there's a few that come to mind, and I'll try to keep them more baseball related because they seem to pop up more than other injuries. But just going back to that last one with Marte, a non-displaced fracture is going to be much better than a displaced fracture. It means everything's still in the right place. It's going to be a quicker time for healing. Same thing with stress fracture. That's a much less significant injury than someone who might have to be casted up and non-weight bearing for a few weeks. Those are two categories of fracture that are less significant. Another similar one was a strain versus a tear, just knowing that a strain really is a small tear. So
yeah,
a lot of people say, oh, he just strained it, he didn't tear it. We're like, well, he kind of did. It's very similar. It's just a lower grade, and like I said it depends on how the front office wants to word it. Basically, another thing that this isn't necessarily anatomy related, but another thing that came up with the Springer injury, when a front office says that somebody might be ready for opening day or ready for the playoffs or ready for the home opener, you got to think a little bit like, are they trying to sell tickets? Like, what's their angle here? Because they don't have to tell us. They could stretch it as much as or little as they want,
right,
as far as what they tell us. And I was on another pod a few weeks back, and I was asked, do you think Springer will be back for opening day? And it was like 5 days out, and he had just injured himself. I said, no way, because that injury, very similar to Tatis, they just paid him. They have no reason to rush him back out. And if you're the front office and you're saying, we could either have all our fans show up in the hopes that they might see Springer, or we could have like 30% of them say, man, I'll wait till he gets healthy. That's something you really want to watch out for when you get quotes from the team. Just to be aware of it and say, like, what's their angle? Do they have a big home series coming up? Red Sox versus Yankees? Are they going to – that can kind of help you to sway your close call decisions there. Yeah, I got a little off the anatomy topic there. But the last thing is rotator cuff injuries. The rotator cuff is a broad term for a collection of four different muscles. So it's not one structure. It's not one muscle. It's four different muscles. And one or two of them are much more significant than the other one or two when you're talking about pitcher injuries. So if they come out and say somebody injured their rotator cuff, well, it's a possibility of four different scenarios because each of those muscles is responsible for a different function. It's very hard to go further than that because they rarely specify which muscle gets injured.
Mm-hmm.
But it's something definitely to look out for. And I don't know if this is something that people will write down or remember, but for example, if you had a strain in your supraspinatus muscle, that's not going to be quite as significant as your infraspinatus muscle because one handles rotation of the arm or one handles elevation of the arm, and the rotation part is much more important. So not that that's something you got to like have with you because they almost never specify, but just knowing that there's a huge variance in how significant those rotator cuff muscles can be because mm-hmm. it's really four different structures.
Yeah. Oh man. Bodies are complicated.
Yeah, they are.
So one non-body related question before we get to some listener questions. Mm-hmm. Your brother pitches for Cleveland. Cleveland is changing their name. Do you have any hope for what the name would be? Any ideas that you want to throw out there that Aaron can take to the front office?
I don't know. I mean, of the ones that have been thrown out there, I kind of like the Guardians. It almost sounds a little cheesy to me at first because you think it's just playing off the popularity of Guardians of the Galaxy or something like that. Mm-hmm. But there's a cool story behind it, how they have a couple bridges going in and out of the city, and they're kind of a landmark over there, and they're the Guardians of Traffic. And it sounds kind of lame, say Guardians of Traffic, but it's something that the city and the people there are like, yeah, those are the Guardians, and we mm-hmm. have something to relate to. So that would be cool. I've also seen, I liked the idea of the Buckeyes, and I know that might get overshadowed by Ohio State a little bit.
Yeah.
But it seems, I was just reading up on it today, and it seems kind of cool. Like there was a Negro League team that went under that name, and it would be kind of a cool homage to them. So I think that'll get some play. I don't think that will end up happening because there's too many OSU fans out there that'll be like, hey, that's not the right thing to do, and that's our team. But I don't know if I had to, I like the Guardians. I thought I liked the Spiders at first, but then everyone else around me was like, that sounds like a little league team. Oh, I guess I don't like that as much now. I don't know.
Yeah, I didn't know about the history with the Guardians. And honestly, I feel like most team names sound rather foolish when you really pull them apart.
I grew up a Red Sox fan, so yeah.
Right, yeah. It's a thing you put on your foot. There are plenty of colleges out there that have really strange names. And professional teams. So yeah, Guardians would be interesting. Yeah, I think if this had happened before the MCU popularized the Guardians of the Galaxy more, it'd be easier. But I like that one. Yeah. That one's interesting. Yeah,
maybe they run with that and they kind of use their popularity to gain some interest.
Yeah, I think if OSU wasn't the Buckeyes in such a well-known program, maybe that would happen.
Yeah,
but
that'd be cool. You know, I've heard Lake Monsters because they're right near Lake Erie. I think it's Lake Erie.
Okay.
That'd be kind of cool, but sounds a little bit like a minor league team. So I don't know.
Yes, we'll see. Okay, so finally, Corbin threw out a couple questions. How did you get interested in doing physical therapy?
The quick and easy answer there is I got hurt a lot playing sports growing up, and I pretty much spent, 3 to 4 days a week coming from school to going right to PT, whether it was at school or at an outpatient place, and just seeing the people go about their jobs and saying, these guys all seem happy, these guys and women, and they're helping people out every day, and they get to stay somewhat involved in sports. And I would come there looking for a way to get back to my sport, and I knew how much it meant to me. So it was kind of a natural progression. As I got later in high school, I kept getting hurt, and I kept thinking this job seems cool. And I had some looks for playing in college, and I tried to match up what school has physical therapy and wants me to play for them. And that's mm-hmm. how it all came together.
Nice. So did they have an undergraduate program as like a pre-PT then?
Yeah, you get accepted into the program as a freshman, and as long as you don't mess up, you're in the grad school program. It's one of the fewer schools that does that. You have to maintain a certain GPA, and there are a few other options, but I thought I'd rather have that stability of knowing I just have to maintain and do my best to keep the GPA up. And
Did you get out of having to take the GRE then? Because that'd be
no. Yeah, you don't have to take it. You're just in. Yeah. So that was a huge draw for why I went there.
Just line it up for 7 years. Nice.
Yeah.
So when you were playing in college, what was one of your top, or in high school, your top moments playing baseball at any point in that career?
There's a few moments in college that are really special to me. The first hit, the first home run, all that stuff. But probably number one is a no hitter I threw in my last year of senior Legion ball.
Okay.
Aaron was on my team at that point. He was he's 3.5 years younger, but he's good enough that he usually played up on my teams, as you could imagine.
Yeah.
So that was cool. It was after, again, similar to college, like 3 years of me trying to convince my coach to let me pitch, but he had always needed me at different positions. He said, no, we got pitchers. And the first game of this doubleheader, we had our Stetson commit, big, tall righty throw the first game, and he did pretty well and gave up a couple runs. And then I pitched the second game against the same team and no hit them. So I was giving him crap for the next 2 years, like, big pitcher over here. So that was my favorite moment, just because it was the whole collection of the whole game. And it was a lot of fun.
Nice. Did you and Aaron ever play against each other, or were you pretty much always on the same team if you were playing together?
Yeah, it was always the same team. The only times it overlapped was Little League and then again in Senior Legion. Okay. We basically never had freshmen making our high school team, so I didn't get a chance to play with him that year. But I was talking about this with my parents the other day, and I've never faced him live. He's throwing BP at me.
Yeah.
And I really want to, like, I hopefully this off season or something he can throw and I'll go meet him somewhere. But, that's something I've never done. And I've obviously everyone wants to see what they could do against big league pitching. So hopefully sometime before I start losing my bat speed, I can face him.
Yeah, it's too bad you guys are flipped on the positions, since you see the family members throwing to people in home run derbies, but pitchers don't have an equivalent of that, of like, here, pitcher, go face your random family member who can't.
I know, right? That'd be cool. I did catch him once for a showcase in front of like a Yankee scout and a Rays scout, and I just went to them and I was like, I'm probably going to miss a ton of breaking balls, so just don't take that against him. And they're like, right. No.
It's because he's got good movement. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's because he's good. It's because I'm bad.
Right. So that's the only time I've got to see the pitches at full speed, a couple bullpens I've caught for him.
Man, catching a professional speed breaking ball would be something. And this is Corbin's favorite question to ask, and we flipped it on him last week when he was on the show. But what is your favorite donut?
My favorite donut is strawberry frosted rainbow sprinkles.
Okay. Very good. Okay, great. Before we let you go, any things you want to follow up on, touch on, any work that's coming out soon, all that good stuff?
I'll be consistently doing articles every couple weeks for the collection of injured players, kind of doing what we did here today. I'm going to try to incorporate a few more video demonstrations and my tweets, so people kind of get a visualization of what's going on. And that'll be coming out pretty regularly through the Fantrax HQ website. I'll tweet them out. And then if there's any major injuries like Tatis, or like when Gallen got injured, or Eloy, I try to put out a nice highlight tweet for them specifically, just keeping people updated as quickly as I can. So doing my best to keep up. There's a lot of injuries to cover. So.
Yeah, and if you don't follow Nick, he'll often get visuals on there, which can, at least for me, be very helpful in thinking about where on the body and what it actually looks like. So link to his account will be in the show notes if you don't already follow him. Okay, thanks so much for hopping on, Nick.
Yeah, it was a blast. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, my pleasure. Well, I'll see you around in 30 Rock. Thanks.
All right, sounds good.
Thank you for listening to the Commissioner's Office. Before we wrap it up, some final housekeeping. You can now go and get Commissioner's Office, Dynasty One Stop, and items for every D1S league at the store on my website linked in the show notes. Don't forget to follow Nick at NICOCIVA1. That's NICOCIVA1, Nico Siva 1. Check out his work over at Fantrax. You can follow me and Dynasty One Stop and see everything Fantasy Commish related there. I'll be back soon with another great show. Please remember to rate and review the podcast on your preferred podcast platform. We really do appreciate it. You can support the podcast through the link in our show notes. That's all from the Commissioner's Office. Until next time, stay safe, stay sane, and always read the Constitution.